that's for the announcements. From then, I want to give it up to Stefan Hohmann, who will run us through the history, I guess, and contents of Unix shells. I want to just give it up, I guess. Stefan Hohmann.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. I want to thank you for attending. Well, I'm Stefan. I do work with shells quite a lot. And sometimes you just get the best answers from the site. A couple of years ago, someone leaned over my shoulder and just innocently asked me, actually, how do you know what to type? I've been stumped. As I said, that's been years ago. I still cannot give a good answer. I've been doing this a day or two, but still that doesn't explain anything. So, yes, fantastic question. I wanted to start off with a small game of mine, which I would call Spot the Shell. Who can spot the shell on this? I know this is a bit dark. Any guesses? Oh, there's pointing fingers. Yeah, that helped. So there's one argument that the entirety of this is a shell. It's a graphical one that happens to have one window in it with a virtual terminal emulator containing a shell. There is a lot going on in the background, of course. That shell is receiving some information from the terminal emulation, things like the geometry of the window and how many lines, how many columns can be displayed. There's also other information like, by the way, this terminal can render, say, Unicode, or can do color text, or knows how to distinguish between all uppercase and all lowercase letters. That used to be a thing. To this day, there's the STTY utility that allows you to tune your terminal to display all uppercase text. So if you really want a shot of the 80s, that's the way to go. We have to constrain ourselves a bit here. So for the purpose of this talk, I'm only going to discuss purely textual shells. That is, they consume text, and if there are any responses, they will be in text as well. Now, I must admit I have angered the demo gods in the most unprecedented way imaginable. I've never had this happen before. From the get-go, I decided I wouldn't do any live demonstrations because this one struck me Friday. I'm going to unravel really quick what this is doing. I don't see anyone with an open shell at the moment, so we can't really show. Just pretend. What this does is echo, fairly simple. It means display a string of text. The dash E is to interpret any special characters in it. That is backslash 033. That is a command instruction to the terminal that tells it basically, listen, what you are about to receive, that is not simple text. You are receiving an instruction. And that instruction is hash 8. What this is supposed to do is to fill your entire screen with capital E's. I'm afraid that no longer does that. The terminal for the longest time had this issue where I don't know what happened. Perhaps the developers thought, all E's, the entire screen, that's a bit much. Let's just run a single line. The other day I found out Xterm is also no longer doing this. That's quite a shame. What this used to do, because on its own that doesn't sound very useful, what it used to do was to give few technicians to a DEC Visual Terminal 100 a chance to inspect the monitor of the attached terminal and see if it was tuned correctly. Sadly, this is no longer possible. We will never know if our monitors are tuned correctly from now on. Terribly sorry. When we really dive back into the history of early shells, we cannot start at Unix. We have to start at Multics. Multics for want of a better term, is a system that very, very successfully failed. It used to be one of the first multi-user systems, and they started to get ideas like, yes, we have multiple users on one system. Perhaps we should give things like security a bit of a thought, perhaps too. Anyhow, Multix is a system that possibly drowned by contemporary standards in its own complexity. Still, the last running system that we know of got shot down in 2000. Given that it got released in 64 or 65, that is still quite an achievement. Anyhow, given the complexity of Multix, there was need for a special program to start other programs, and that's been Runcom. From where it started, it's been quite simple. It would read a single file in and just line by line execute what it would find in there. However, the designer behind Runcom, Louis Poussin, he had some other ideas as well, like, okay, we do this. How about we do not read from a file, but from a terminal directly? That would allow us to introduce system changes while the system was running. That was fairly new, and it ended up being one of the strong points of Multix, actually. The implementation has been done by Glenda Schroeder and an unnamed engineer from General Electric, we believe, which does show you the next time someone asks you to document your things very thoroughly, do reply, no, I'm partaking in a very long-standing tradition and I do not want to break it, on risk of being forgotten by history. I sort of spoiled there are essentially two modes to a shell. One is the interactive one, where there would be a pattern of reading input, evaluating it, printing a result, and then looping back. The other would be to read something from a file. That would be the batch mode. Well, the Unix shells decided to lead their input files with a hash and a bang. Does anyone know what that is? You do. Almost. He meant to say you specify how something is executed. That is almost correct. It is a magic marker. These are two binary markers that happen to be text presentable. And what happens, well, from the operating system's point of view, if it encounters such a file with a request to be executed, it will see these first two characters, decide, oh, that's a shell script, see possibly what interpreter has been specified behind that in the remaining line, and then invoke that and pass that very file in as standard input. And because it starts with a hash, which is a comment in most shell interpreters, that one gets ignored. Quite ingenious. Now, the very first genuine Unix shell, that would have been the Thompson shell by Ken Thompson. Ken Thompson and Dennis Ritchie, both of those names should ring a bell, because they've been key figures in early Unix development. Interestingly enough, they first worked on Multix and then moved over to Unix. What the Thompson shell had above RC has been very simple flow controls. Things like you could take the output of one program and just write it off to a file. It would work into the opposite direction as well, as in you would read a file and present it as input to a program. So a few iterations in, they had this great idea of, hold on, we can do better. How about we take the output of one program and present it as input to the other program? that is piping. That's been quite new back then, and it's been such a great idea that it got taken over by other operating systems that do not really have a Unix history. For example, DOS had it in, I think, version 3.3 at the earliest. Moving on, there used to be a special flavor of Unix known as the Programmer's Workbench Unix. That's been geared specifically at developers, featuring special tools and whatnot. And part of the team has been one John Macy. Now, Macy felt that the original Unix shell, it was a bit lacking in terms of things like flow control, branch execution. It could not really do things like variables. And John Macy, well, he decided he would patch that in of sorts, and that gave us the Macy shell. We do have the Bourne shell. That is not Bash, just to give it clear. It's way too early for Bash at this point. What Bourne did here is he basically extended the Macy shell. It had more shell built-ins than previous shells. You've got to imagine things like file globbing. You initially were not the job of the shell. They would be that would be something that would be offloaded to a separate program called glob. So just to give an example, if you wanted all the files in one directory that ended in .c, you could glob them by specifying *.c as a file name. That would be expanded by the glob utility, and then presented to the program to be invoked as a list. The Bourne shell had this as a built-in, along with some things for conditionals such as test. And if you ever wondered why /bin/opening square bracket is an action file on your system, or even /bin/opening square bracket, that is fairly much thanks to the previous shells. Also, funny thing to mention, Stephen Bourne, he had a background in Algol 68, and he did not really like C. Back in those days, if you wanted to do any development on Unix, you would have to really use C or fall back to assembler or possibly raw machine code. Still, he wanted a shell that is quite a complex endeavor, and he had no transport to use C. What did he do? Well, C has a preprocessor that allows you to, well, shuffle things around a little, and he used that extensively to make the C language look more like Algol 68. This also reflects in part of the syntax for branch execution. If you always felt that this looked a little bit off, that's the Algol heritage. Then there is C shell. I will forever in my head entertain the idea. This is probably not what happened, but I just find the idea very, very amusing that someone got so upset over having to use Algol in their Unix shell that they essentially rage-coded a new shell interface into existence, modeled after the C programming language. And presto, C shell. It's probably not what happened. The Bourne shell has been in development for a good 3 years or so. It's not impossible that Bill Joy knew of this ahead, but still, I do like the idea. Well, C shell, as I mentioned, it's structured more like C. This mostly reflects, you know, if you write shell scripts to it. So if you are heavily entrenched in C, you will find this incredibly easy to read, and probably be irritated that some major keywords are simply not there. Well, there you go. It does. They do look like, right, compared to Bash, they or Ash. Sorry, losing my train of thought here. Hold on. Compared to Bourne, They do look quite pretty, I think. Also, if you ever encountered a situation where you typed in a command and you found yourself, oh, silly me, I needed super user privileges for that. Well, if you then typed sudo !! That is a shell expansion that comes directly from C shell. Also, things like the tilde sign to have a shortcut for your home directory or someone else's home directory. That got introduced in the C shell as well. Coming up next, we have the 10x C shell. 10x was an operating system for the PDP-10, a mainframe one, and its shell interface was, I dare say, aggressively not Unix. However, it was highly interactive and had great features in terms of auto-completion. If you consider the shells of some embedded devices like iOS-based switches, if you're in the middle of a prompt and you hit the question mark, that would give you a list of possible expansions. And, well, the TC shell got highly inspired by that. And also, it is excellent in keeping backwards compatibility towards the C shell, to the point that on some systems, if you wanted to install the C shell through the packaging mechanisms, you would not actually get it. You would get that the TC shell that would then be linked as C shell. While we are still in the historic session, that distinction is completely made up by me. We do have three shells consecutively that all claim to be bin.sh. I think you can imagine how this is a bit of an issue. What emerged from here, bin.sh on systems nowadays has to exist. There are exactly two standards covering it. One is the File System Hierarchy standard, which evolved from early ESH Unix development. It's basically a description which directories have to exist and which purpose they fulfill. The FHS does demand that bin.sh exists, and it must be a shell interpreter that is compatible to POSIX. POSIX, another standard, it's short for the Portable Operating System Interface, and the X is just there for marketing, basically. There are several iterations of the POSIX standard, sadly, so we cannot say with certainty which one is the genuine POSIX shell, unless you really specify the iteration of the standard. Okay, Quantshell. I met someone on the camping field here who felt deeply scarred by having to use the corn shell. It had a bit of an unfortunate development. Oh, is it you too? Okay. It did not start as a free shell. When you wanted to get it, you had to pay a small fee to get the source code and compile it yourself. It has been set out to combine all the then best features from the Bourne shell, from the C shell, from whatnot, everything good combined into one, and also really, really performant. The last part that gave it quite the reputation to spread throughout the Unix ecosystem, and to this day the corn shell is still the default shell for a number of those. Now that also brought with it that the further development of the corn shell has been incredibly fragmented. You could say every flavor of Unix had their own flavor of corn shell as well. Also, it started to be ported over due to licensing issues and started being re-implemented. Today, it is an absolute mess. I do recommend the 2019 Fostum talk, Squeezing Water from Stone, by Siteshwar Vasisht. He tried to consolidate what was out there and get the Cornshell 2020 going, I'm afraid that is by now an abandoned project, really. Oh, yes. One interesting thing is the Cornshell has been the first to dare being an object-oriented shell, so it wasn't just signals and return codes. There's been more to it. Then again, not every flavor of Cornshell had it, or has it. Going into more recent times, we do have the Alquist shell. That is an interesting one. We would still find it a lot in embedded systems where there is not a lot of resources to be consumed. It is not very demanding, practically working in each and every environment. And what really sets it apart, it does have a command history. And meaning you can bring up commands you previously entered, modify those, and resubmit these. That's been a feature not all shells have. Alquist himself, the creator of Ash, initially thought that this was not supposed to be a shell's job. That's why it wasn't there. His stance was, this is really a task for the terminal driver. Which does have a point, but then everybody decided, okay, we want our terminals to be as dumb and simple as possible, and this is clearly the job of a shell, if it is willing to take it. Now, finally, Bash, 1989. Bash is, I dare say, the gold standard when it comes to interactive shells. It is massively feature-rich, and it is by... Well, for really a number of distributions, it is the default shell. If people can introduce the shell, they are often thrown against Bash. And for that very reason, one piece of advice I continue to give over and over again, it's really good, is do take the time, sit down, and do read the manual page to Bash at least once. It will give you a better understanding of the capabilities of the shell, except for the section that discusses TCP and UDP programming in Bash. Please do pretend that doesn't exist. Even for educational purposes, there will be a better way. Another thing about Bash is it does not have its own line editor. It does rely on the readline library. A number of shells can do this. This is both good and bad. It is difficult to configure the behavior to be exclusive to Bash. On the other hand, every program using the readline library will behave exactly the same if you configure it. A bit of a time jump, there is Dash, that is the Debian Elmquist shell. Dash started as a port of BSD's Ash, and it has a quite vital role in Debian and Ubuntu systems. I mentioned earlier that BinSH has to exist. There's no one sitting in front of a computer right now. Okay. Thought experiment. Right. Thought experiment then. If you looked up BinSH, where it linked to, on a more Red Hat type of system, it would link to Bash. On Debian and Ubuntu, it would point to Dash. You just check that. Okay. It could be wildly different shells, by the way. It could even be Cornshell. Anyhow, it does have a vital role in early boot of Debian and Ubuntu. See, Bash has some really, really powerful features that are quite tempting to use in your startup script. And the Debian folks say they got slightly unsatisfied with their boot times and decided Bash is not going to be our default shell for parsing startup scripts anymore. We will use Dash. That brought with it that Dash started to implement some of the features of Bash. Those things there that would colloquially be known as Bashisms. So be careful how you pronounce that. Aside from that, it is also an excellent emergency shell. If something goes wrong on a Debian or Ubuntu system and you need to conduct emergency repairs, there's a high chance you have to work with Dash, which is, I have to say it, it's quite excellent at what it does. I don't know if I would use it as a daily driver, but yeah, well. Next up, Zshell. That is my personal daily driver. Not for work, but for my personal projects, Zshell. It is incredibly powerful in its command line editor. I should mention, both Bash and Zshell can be... Well, they do have an advanced mode of line editing, that is the VI mode. And if you really wanted to, yes, there's also an Emacs mode. Though I would argue if you really need to harness the power of Vim or Emacs, I would rather suggest you really bring it up and write a proper shell script. Up to you. It has very powerful globbing options, so things like asterisk works to recursively look up patterns. I'm not really going to, I have to admit, most of the selling features you see for Zshell are actually in Bash. You just need to enable them. Still, I do prefer Zshell for a number of reasons. The auto-completion is also superb. And speaking of that, then there's the friendly interactive shell. That one is comparatively new. It's been designed to be especially accommodating towards newcomers. In doing so, it does feature things like syntax highlighting. It does give you suggestions of what you may want to type. It does make auto completion of commands really, really smooth. Unfortunately, in doing so, the designers and developers of Fish, they decided to drop a lot of the POSIX components. POSIX compliance is really not a priority to Fish at all. And thus, I'm afraid it's a pass for me. Who expected that to hear? Okay, PowerShell is available for OS X. OS X at one point was Unix certified, I understand, so it's fully qualified to be here. PowerShell has some interesting features. It is fully object-oriented from the start. It's been born out of necessity, if you will. People creating Windows realized one day that the automation features they had with the command shell, that's been a carryover from DOS times, that was simply insufficient to really control a modern system, and they needed something new, and that's been PowerShell. Now, PowerShell does have a strong influence from Conshell, of all places. That is actually not that surprising, given the Microsoft history and Unix. Microsoft used to have their own flavor called Xenix. That's been heavy on Conshell, so they must have accumulated a lot of in-house knowledge, even though that between the end of the Xenix project and start of development of PowerShell, there's quite a gap, but still. Now, this talk would not be complete without mentioning New Shell. Who's using that? No. Okay. Who's heard of that? Oh, quite a few. Yeah. Newshell is a bit, if you want it, a mix between PowerShell and Fish. It has very, very powerful auto-completion features, and also it natively understands most structured data formats, such as JSON, such as YAML. It, in a nutshell, if you find yourself manipulating structured data a lot through, say, JQ or YQ, and then pass the result on to another program like curl2 and invoke an API, NewShell is really for you, and you should consider it. There's one... I lost that thought. It's too late, sorry. Nope, not coming yet. How are you with the time, actually? Oh. Fine, okay. Then we do have some honorary mentions here. One of my favorite is the SSH hidden shell, even though it is more of a menu than a shell. If you hit tilde question mark, you get all the options. And if you ever find yourself in a situation where your peer broke, rendered unresponsive, and you had a hanging SSH session, you can simply hit tilde point by default, and that is going to break the connection. Don't do this always. It's a bit rude. Hit control D to exit interactive shells. It's way more graceful. Then we do have restricted shells. I knew of RBash for quite a long time, and I thought it was a Bash-exclusive feature. Bash can be made to run in restricted mode, which limits you quite heavily. You cannot change directories, for example. You are really locked inside your own home directory. As part of the research to this talk, I had to discover that this is actually a feature mentioned in POSIX. Quite interesting. Didn't know that. It sounds like a good idea, really, for non-interactive programs that still need a shell. You would give them RBash or some other shell, and that would be a secure setup. Turns out, no. All you need to do to break out of a restricted shell is to somehow acquire a subshell that is not the restricted shell. So, don't use it. Because I really, really like to put myself into hot water, I dare to mention BusyBox and ToyBox on one slide. BusyBox and ToyBox are both so-called multi-call libraries, multi-call binaries, sorry. They do exist to help provide a more complete user land in very constrained environments. So, say you have something in embedded, you would use BusyBox or ToyBox to provide service utilities like LS, PS, you name it. The way it works is all of these service utilities you would expect will be linked to either BusyBox or ToyBox, and upon invocation, the first parameter that is being passed to a program in Unix, and really most operating systems, that is the name by which they got invoked. Through that mechanism, they can decide how they really behave. As part of that, they do provide some shells, Ash and Bash being two of them. The Bash implementation is fairly hit or miss, but Ash is fairly, fairly good. So I thought I'd be running out of time at this point, but apparently I don't. So let's get over some more shells in some quick-fire fashion. There is the standalone shell, Sash, that is purely Unix. I think it's modeled after Dash, fairly new. Also, I think 2015 has been the release date. Krosh is something you would find in Chrome OS. It started as a collection of very small scripts, because they thought they would not afford a full bash. over the last 10 years, gradually things got re-implemented in Rust. Zonj, I don't know a lot about Zonj. Which is an actual shell. It's used for TCLTK to facilitate automation of graphical programs. SCSH, that's the scheme shell. For all of those of you who finished playing through Emacs and just cannot get enough scheme, there's the scheme shell. Q shell is an IBM thing. The Hamilton C shell is actually not really a Unix shell. It's a re-implementation of the C shell on Windows and OS 2, I believe. Bean shell is a Java thing. ES, ES is the extensible shell that got forked off a new version of RC. Plan 9 and Unix Edition 10 do have a new version of RC. Really, they are only similar in name to the original RC I discussed earlier. Forked off of it comes the extensible shell, and then there is OSH, that's the old shell. It's a mixture between, what was it, C shell and some... I forgot. Anyhow, conclusions. Shells are still holding strong as an interface. Part of it is they make it incredibly easy to, through shell script, to describe a desired state in a textual format, and that can easily be compared, that can be versioned, that can be kept in outright version control, and we do get more or less guaranteed results. As part of this talk, I would really recommend that you go and try some shells on your own that are not your default shell. The default shells on Unix systems, on distributions, they are there to cater to a rather large audience. That does not mean they are right for you. As a rule of thumb, if you try a shell and you find that you need to configure it a lot, that could be a sign it's not for you. Also, if you do change your default shell, be a bit careful on Linux. There's a file called etc shells. The pluggable authentication mechanism will look for that file, and if your login shell is not contained in there, it will not let you log in. And I think I'd like to conclude on this point. And we are quite early.
Great. So thanks, Stefan, for this amazing talk. We do have enough time for a Q&A. So if there are any questions from the audience, please.
So I'm a long-time Bash user. How much better is Z shell, and should I really try it? Would that make sense, or would I just be put off?
There's one feature in Z shell that is there out of the box. If you type a command and you are uncertain about the syntax, about certain parameters, you can hit escape H, and that will give you the man page to that very command. If you exit the manual page, you're back to your original prompt. So it's those little things that really make your life easier with Z shell. If it's really for you, perhaps we can discuss this over a beer or something. It is a very broad question.
So between Z shell and Fish is not POSIX compliant, which is annoying. But the defaults of Fish are very nice. How easy is it to get them also in Z shell?
There are a lot of let's call them plugins to get the say auto suggestion behavior of Fish back into Z shell or even Bash. From my experience, it's never going to be really, really the same. That is, by the way, thanks for pointing that out, because I completely forgot. PowerShell has some auto-completion mechanisms that are absolutely infuriating. If you've been spoiled by either Bash, Zshell, or even Fish, that can be configured to be improved, but it's never going to be on the same level. And I'm afraid the same goes for Fish and Zshell and Bash.
So, thanks for the talk. This is not really a question, it's more a note of color. You were saying experiment a little bit. So I pulled out my laptop, logged into a SmartOS machine I have at home. For those unfamiliar about that, that's an Illumos Drive operating system. So it's basically a Solaris, derived from Open Solaris, Open Indiana, and so on. And I checked the shell. I had the machine for quite a few years. It's running a ton of Solaris zones, and it's KSH93. And I have to say that in, I think, 3-4 years I had it, I never even noticed. So it's so compatible with Bash and ZSH that I run as daily drivers all the time that didn't even see it.
Yeah, thing being, KSH93 alone is not saying a lot. I think the latest version is something like KSH93 M plus U or something. So...
What drove you to make this talk?
Someone asked me how I knew what to type on a shell.
Oh, yeah. Sorry about that.
It's okay. I think we're done. Oh.
Kind of an open question, but you spent a fair bit of time thinking about shells. Is there anything that you miss? Do you feel like shells are missing something that you'd like to have?
Oh, that's a good one. AI is on the set. Yeah, I would gladly do without AI, please. Actually, the PowerShell auto-completion can be augmented through AI. That means it's barred from ever seeing your credentials. I'm afraid I do not really know how to answer that question. Well, it's been a great one.
Thank you, and give it up for Stefan.